103. Hypocrite. Many cultures speak of the so-called death rattles that sometimes overtake people as they die. Tradition ascribes them to the Almighty, but I find too many to be seemingly prophetic. This will be my most contentious assertion, I am sure, but I think these are the effects of Moloch persisting in our current times. Proof is easy to provide. The effect is regionalized and tends to move across Roshar. This is the roving of the unmade. From Hesse's Mythica, page 170. Dalinar started awake in an unfamiliar place, lying on a floor of cut stone, his back stiff. He blinked sleepily, trying to orient himself. Storms, where was he? Soft sunlight shone through an open balcony on the far side of the room, and ethereal motes of dust danced in the streams of light. What were those sounds? They seemed like the voices of people, but muffled. Dalinar stood, then fastened the side of his uniform jacket, which had come undone. It had been, what, 3 days since his return from Yaakoved? His excommunication from the Voren Church? He remembered those days as a haze of frustration, sorrow, agony. And drink. A great deal of drink. He'd been using the stupor to drive away the pain. A terrible bandage for his wounds, blood seeping out on all sides. But so far, it had kept him alive. I know this room, he realized, glancing at the mural on the ceiling. I saw it in one of my visions. A high storm must have come while he passed out. Stormfather, Dalinar called, his voice echoing. Stormfather, why have you sent me a vision? We agreed they are too dangerous. Yes, he remembered this place well. This was the vision where he'd met Noadon, author of The Way of Kings. Why wasn't it playing out as it had before? He and Noadon had walked to the balcony, talked for a time, then the vision had ended. Dalinar started toward the balcony, but storms, that light was so intense. It washed over him, making his eyes water, and he had to raise his hands to shield his eyes. He heard something behind him, scratching. He turned, putting his back to the brilliance, and spotted a door on the wall. It swung open easily beneath his touch, and he stepped out of the loud sunlight to find himself in a circular room. He shut the door with a click. This chamber was much smaller than the previous one, with a wooden floor. Windows in the walls looked out at a clear sky. A shadow passed over one of these, like something enormous moving in front of the sun. But how could the sun be pointed this direction, too? Dalinar looked over his shoulder at the wooden door. No light peeked underneath it. He frowned and reached for the handle, then paused, hearing the scratching once more. Turning, he saw a large desk heaped with papers by the wall. How had he missed that earlier? A man sat at the desk, lit by a loose diamond, writing with a reed pen. Noadon had aged. In the previous vision, the king had been young, but now his hair was silver, his skin marked by wrinkles. It was the same man, though, same face shape, same beard that came to a point. He wrote with focused concentration. Dalinar stepped over. The Way of Kings, he whispered. I'm watching it be written.
Actually, Noadon said, it's a shopping list. I'll be cooking shinloaf bread today, if I can get the ingredients. It always breaks people's brains. Grain was not meant to be so fluffy.
What? Dalinar scratched at the side of his head. Noadon finished with a flourish and tossed the pen down. He threw back his chair and stood, grinning like a fool, and grabbed Dalinar by the arms.
Good to see you again, my friend. You've been having a hard time of it lately, haven't you?
You have no idea, Dalinar whispered, wondering who Noadon saw him as.
In the previous vision, Dalinar had appeared as one of Noadon's advisors.
They'd stood together on the balcony as Noadon contemplated a war to unite the world. A drastic resort intended to prepare mankind for the next desolation. Could that morose figure have really become this spry and eager? And where had this vision come from? Hadn't the Stormfather told Dalinar that he'd seen them all?
Come, Noadon said. Let's go to the market. A little shopping to turn your mind from your troubles.
Shopping?
Yes. You shop, don't you?
I usually have people do that for me.
Ah, but of course you do, Noadon said. Very like you to miss a simple joy so you can get to something more important. Well, come on. I'm the king. You can't very well say no now, can you?
Noadon led Dalinar back through the door. The light was gone. They crossed to the balcony, which last time had overlooked death and desolation. Now it looked out on a bustling city full of energetic people and rolling carts. The sound of the place crashed into Dalinar as if it had been suppressed until that moment. Laughing, chatting, calling. Wagons creaking, chulls bleeding. The men wore long skirts tied at the waists by wide girdles, some of which came all the way up over their stomachs. Above that, they had bare chests or wore simple overshirts. The outfits resembled the takama Dalinar had worn when younger, though of a far, far older style. The tubular gowns on the women were even stranger, made of layered small rings of cloth with tassels on the bottom. They seemed to ripple as they moved. The women's arms were bare up to the shoulders, no safe hand covering.
In the previous vision, I spoke the dawn chant, Dalinar remembered. The words that gave Nabani's scholars a starting point to translate ancient texts. How do we get down?
Dalinar asked, seeing no ladder. Noadon leaped off the side of the balcony. He laughed, falling and sliding along a cloth banner tied between a tower window and a tent below. Dalinar cursed, leaning forward, worried for the old man until he spotted Noadon glowing. He was a surge binder, but Dalinar had known that from the last vision, hadn't he? Dalinar walked back to the writing chamber and drew the stormlight from the diamond that Noadon had been using. He returned, then heaved himself off the balcony, aiming for the cloth Noadon had used to break his fall. Dalinar hit it at an angle and used it like a slide, keeping his right foot forward to guide his descent. Near the bottom, he flipped off the banner, grabbing its edge with two hands and hanging there for an instant before dropping with a thump beside the king. Noadon clapped.
I thought you wouldn't do it.
I have practiced following fools in their reckless pursuits.
The old man grinned, then scanned his list.
This way,
he said, pointing.
I can't believe you're out shopping by yourself. No guards?
I walked all the way to Urethiro on my own. I think I can manage this.
You didn't walk all the way to Urethiro, Dalinar said. You walked to one of the Oath Gates, then took that to Urethiro.
Misconception, Noadon said. I walked the whole way, though I did require some help to reach Urethiro's caverns. That is no more a cheat than taking a ferry across a river.
He bustled through the market, and Dalinar followed, distracted by the colorful clothing everyone was wearing. Even the stones of the buildings were painted in vibrant colors. He'd always imagined the past as dull. Statues from ancient times were weathered, and he'd never considered that they might have been painted so brightly. What of Noadon himself? In both visions, Dalinar had been shown someone he did not expect. The young Noadon considering war, now the elderly one glib and whimsical. Where was the deep-thinking philosopher who had written The Way of Kings?
Remember, Dalinar told himself, this isn't really him. The person I'm talking to is a construct of the vision.
Though some people in the market recognized their king, his passing didn't cause much of a stir. Dalinar spun as he saw something move beyond the buildings, a large shadow that passed between two structures, tall and enormous. He stared in that direction, but didn't see it again.
They entered a tent where a merchant was selling exotic grains. The man bustled over and hugged Noadon in a way that should have been improper for a king. Then the two started haggling like scribes. The rings on the merchant's fingers flashed as he gestured at his wares. Dalinar lingered near the side of the tent, taking in the scents of the grains in the sacks. Outside, something made a distant thud, then another. The ground shook, but nobody reacted.
"No, your majesty?" Dalinar asked.
Noadon ignored him. A shadow passed over the tent. Dalinar ducked, judging the form of the shadow, the sounds of crashing footfalls.
"Your majesty,"
he shouted, fear spren growing up around him.
"We're in danger."
The shadow passed, and the footfalls grew distant.
"Deal," Noadon said to the merchant. "And well argued, you swindler. Make sure to buy Lani something nice with the extra spheres you got off me."
The merchant bellowed a laughing reply.
"You think you got the worst of that? Storms, your majesty. You argue like my grandmother when she wants the last spoonful of jam."
"Did you see that shadow?"
Dalinar asked Noadon.
"Have I told you," Noadon replied, "where I learned to make shin loaf bread? It wasn't in Shin Kok Nish, if that's what you were going to reply."
"I..."
Dalinar looked in the direction the enormous shadow had gone.
No, you haven't told me." "It was at war," Noadon said. "In the west. One of those senseless battles in the years following the desolation. I don't even remember what caused it. Someone invaded someone else, and that threatened our trade through Makabakam. So off we went. Well, I ended up with a scouting group on the edge of the Shin border. So you see, I tricked you just now. I said I wasn't in Shin Kok Nish, and I wasn't. But I was right next to it. My troops occupied a small village beneath one of the passes. The matron who cooked for us accepted my military occupation without complaint. She didn't seem to care which army was in charge. She made me bread every day, and I liked it so much she asked if I wanted to learn."
He trailed off. In front of him, the merchant set weights on one side of his large set of scales, representing the amount Noadon had purchased, then started pouring grain into a bowl on the other side of the scale. Golden, captivating grain, like the light of captured flames.
"What happened to the cook woman?" Dalinar asked.
"Something very unfair," Noadon said. "It's not a happy story. I considered putting it into the book, but decided my story would best be limited to my walk to Urethiru."
He fell silent, contemplative. "He reminds me of Taravangian," Dalinar suddenly thought. "How odd."
"You're having trouble, my friend," Noadon said. "Your life, like that of the woman, is unfair."
"Being a ruler is a burden, not merely a privilege," Dalinar said. "You taught me that. But storms, Noadon. I can't see any way out. We've gathered the monarchs, yet the drums of war beat in my ears, demanding. For every step I make with my allies, we seem to spend weeks deliberating. The truth whispers in the back of my mind. I could best defend the world if I could simply make the others do as they should."
Noadon nodded.
"So why don't you?"
"You didn't."
"I tried and failed. That led me to a different path."
"You're wise and thoughtful. I'm a warmonger, Noadon. I've never accomplished anything without bloodshed."
He heard them again. The tears of the dead, Evie, the children, flames burning a city. He heard the fire roar in delight at the feast. The merchant ignored them, busy trying to get the grain to balance. The weighted side was still heavier. Noadon set a finger on the bowl with the grain and pushed down, making the sides even.
"That will do, my friend."
"But," the merchant said,
"give the excess to the children, please. After all that haggling, you know I'd have donated some if you'd asked. And miss the fun of negotiating?
Noadon said. He borrowed the merchant's pen, then crossed an item off his list.
There is satisfaction, he said to Dalinar, in creating a list of things you can actually accomplish, then removing them one at a time. As I said, a simple joy.
Unfortunately, I'm needed for bigger things than shopping.
Isn't that always the problem? Tell me, my friend, you talk about your burdens and the difficulty of the decision. What is the cost of a principle?
The cost? There shouldn't be a cost to being principled.
Oh? What if making the right decision created a spren who instantly blessed you with wealth, prosperity, and unending happiness? What then? Would you still have principles? Isn't a principle about what you give up, not what you gain?
So it's all negative, Dalinar said. Are you implying that nobody should have principles because there's no benefit to them?
Hardly, Noadon said. But maybe you shouldn't be looking for life to be easier because you choose to do something that is right. Personally, I think life is fair. It's merely that often you can't immediately see what balances it.
He wagged the finger he'd used to tip the merchant's scales.
If you'll forgive a somewhat blatant metaphor, I've grown fond of them. You might say I wrote an entire book about them.
This is different from the other visions, Dalinar said. What's going on?
The thumping from before returned. Dalinar spun, then charged out of the tent, determined to get a look at the thing. He saw it above the buildings, a stone creature with an angular face and red spots glowing deep in its rocky skull.
Storms, and he had no weapon.
Noadon stepped from the tent, holding his bag of grain. He looked up and smiled. The creature leaned down, then offered a large, skeletal hand. Noadon touched it with his own, and the creature stilled.
This is quite the nightmare you've created, Noadon said. What does that thunderclast represent, I wonder?
Pain, Dalinar said, backing away from the monster. Tears. Burdens. I'm a lie, Noadon, a hypocrite.
Sometimes a hypocrite is nothing more than a man who is in the process of changing.
Wait, hadn't Dalinar said that? Back when he'd felt stronger? More certain?
Other thumps sounded in the city, hundreds of them. Creatures approaching from all sides, shadows in the sun.
All things exist in three realms, Dalinar, Noadon said. The physical, where you are now, the cognitive, what you see yourself as being, the spiritual, the perfect you, the person beyond pain and error and uncertainty.
Monsters of stone and horror surrounded him, heads cresting roofs, feet crushing buildings.
You've said the oaths, Noadon called, but do you understand the journey? Do you understand what it requires? You've forgotten one essential part, one thing that without which there can be no journey.
The monsters slammed fists toward Dalinar and he shouted.
What is the most important step a man can take?
Dalinar awoke, huddled in his bed in Urethiru, asleep in his clothing again. A mostly empty bottle of wine rested on the table. There was no storm. It hadn't been a vision. He buried his face in his hands, trembling. Something bloomed inside of him. A recollection. Not really a new memory. Not one he'd completely forgotten, but it suddenly became as crisp as if he'd experienced it yesterday. The night of Gavilar's funeral.